from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on this Veterans Day holiday, a look at a system of alternative justice for service members in legal trouble. There are more than 100 veterans courts across the country, including several right here in California. When a vet is arrested, these courts take into account their military service and the damage it may have done to their mental health. Supporters say veterans courts work and save taxpayers money. But critics, including the ACLU, criticize them for creating a two-tiered justice system. This hour, we'll discuss the pros and cons and talk with the Chief Judge of Santa Clara County's Veterans Court. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week for Michael Krasny. Well, on this Veterans Day holiday, we're going to examine a growing trend that steers vets in trouble with the law to treatment rather than jail or prison. The first Veterans Court was created in Buffalo, New York in 2008, and today there are at least 120 of them in 35 states, with another 100 or so in the works. We've got about a dozen or so here in California. And this hour, we're taking a look at the concept behind veteran courts and how they work, how well they work, and also why some critics feel that they give service members a legal break that others don't get. Joining me here in the studio is Stephen Manley, the judge in Santa Clara County, who presides over the Veterans Treatment Court. Good morning to you, Judge.
Good morning.
Also with us by phone, Christopher Deutsch, the Director of Communications for Justice for Vets. They advocate for the creation of veteran treatment courts, joining us this morning from Washington, D.C. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And also with us by phone, Nick Stefanik. He is a former combat veteran from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, a graduate of the Rochester, New York Veterans Treatment Court. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
Let me start with you, Judge Manley. First of all, give us the concept behind the veterans courts.
Well, the concept is to bring together the Veterans Administration and the county treatment system in a collaborative effort with a court, involves the district attorney, the public defender, and reach out to provide treatment and services to veterans who have served their country and have gotten caught up in the criminal justice system. We use treatment. Each court is somewhat different in terms of the group they target who are veterans and in the services and treatment they're able to provide. We have many challenges in our county and in our court in trying to find enough treatment to provide it to the numerous veterans who are in our program.
And when you say treatment, do you mean drug treatment, or what's the range of treatment you're talking about?
The range of treatment is very, very broad. It's because we have come to understand that most veterans, as a matter of fact, most criminal justice offenders who come into our system who have treatment needs, they're broad. They include mental health treatment, and that can be for PTSD, depression, other illnesses. Substance abuse is very, very common, particularly when it's related to mental health issues. In addition, there are medical and physical issues the veterans often have. A traumatic brain injury, head injuries, concussion, that generally I have found in my work are often directly related to mental health issues. So that an individual who is being treated for traumatic brain injury may also be treated at the same time for substance abuse and mental health issues.
And what kinds of trouble with the law? What kinds of crimes are eligible for some and what isn't? Where's the line? What's the dividing line?
That's going to depend on the court and the state. Many states and courts have restrictions. In California, we have a statute that is very broad and not only includes the broadest range of veterans in terms of whether or not not requiring that they have served directly in combat, but also it provides the greatest flexibility to courts. And each veterans treatment court is going to be very specific in who they will accept and who they will not.
And is that up to the individual judge?
It's a collaborative effort. It's going to take in my view, without the support of the district attorney, the public defender, the court, probation, the Veterans Administration, you're not going to get anywhere. And so each collaboration reaches their own consensus as to the group they will serve. Ours are very broad, whereas other courts are limited. And I think we have to understand that it's going to depend on each jurisdiction.
Christopher Deutsch, let me ask you, your group advocates for the creation of these treatment courts. What's the rationale? I mean, why should vets have a separate system of justice under some circumstances?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. If you're just going to purely look at it from a practical fiscal approach, we know that regardless of whether or not someone's a veteran or non-veteran, if the addicted and the mentally ill are not served well by jail, by going to prison. 80 to 90% will reoffend. They're going to be back on the streets. They're going to cost the taxpayers money. So there's a fiscal reasoning to divert as many drug addicted and mentally ill offenders into treatment programs as we can. And veterans treatment courts are a way of doing that. But they also economize resources. As Judge Manley has talked about, the veterans who go through these programs are connected to the benefits and the services that they've earned because of their military service, benefits and services through the VA. By clustering them onto one court docket in a courtroom where they're surrounded by other veterans, there's an understanding of what they've been through, it allows the VA to be present at every court session, to be a part of the treatment team, and to really streamline access to those services. And then, of course, there's the reason that these men and women have voluntarily served their country, gone into harm's way to protect our freedoms, and they didn't sign up with a criminal record. They didn't sign up drug addicted. They didn't volunteer for service mentally ill. So when they come back and they struggle as a result of that service, we really owe them our greatest effort to get them back on track.
And how are the veterans courts different from, say, drug courts?
They operate under a very similar model, that collaborative approach the judge talked about, where the judge and the prosecutor and the defense attorney, probation, law enforcement, and treatment are all at the table. That's a part of drug court as well as veterans treatment courts. One of the key differences is that, for one, the treatment is going to be the VA. So you're going to have the VA on the team working to get these folks treatment through the VA, get them connected to their benefits through disability compensation. They're also going to use volunteer veteran mentors from the community to offer peer support, which is really, the camaraderie that exists among veterans is truly unique. And when these men and women can come into a courtroom that so clearly understands what they've been through, and they can talk to other veterans who are out in the community that can offer their support, their vet-to-vet support, it really makes a big difference to get them to buy into the program.
You know, we've been hearing so much, though, about the long backlog and the delays that veterans have in getting treatment from the VA. It sounds like these folks who are in trouble with the law go to the front of the line.
Well, I will say that the leverage of the court does go a long way and Judge Manley can speak to this, but when you have a veteran who's wound up in Veterans Treatment Court and they've never been connected to the VA, they're clearly disabled, but they have no disability rating, and the court can assist in making that claim. It does tend to get things moving a little faster, but I think it does underscore the tremendous need for front end solutions, and one of the big front end solutions we need to work on is minimizing that backlog, because that's when you see a lot of veterans in a very vulnerable position while they're waiting to get their treatment, while they're waiting to get their disability compensation. They're very vulnerable, and if we don't get them hooked up fast enough, we run the risk of having them enter the criminal justice system.
Judge Manley, is there almost a perverse incentive to get in trouble with the law in some kind of a minor way anyway, just to get the attention and maybe get the services faster?
No, I don't think so at all. Actually, my frustration on a daily basis is the long waiting lines, the inability to access treatment. I learned this early on. My great interest in veterans treatment courts came from having worked many years with Vietnam veterans who were homeless. And that was an unpopular conflict. And in my view, the courts never appropriately responded to the needs of veterans who came home from Vietnam. And to this day, they're still in the streets. And one of the things I noted is that they were not able ever to access treatment. They never went. You never got a report as to what happened if they did go. And to this day, It just disturbs me greatly that I see veterans coming home from Afghanistan and Iraq, refer them, and there is still these long waiting lists, particularly for benefits and particularly for housing as well. So when you step away and set treatment aside, and there's waiting lists for treatment, so that someone who's actively using drugs every day needs to be in a residential treatment program if that's what they've been assessed for. That's what they need, or they will continue to break the law. Now, if you have to wait weeks and weeks and weeks to get in that treatment program, you will be rearrested and you will be right back where we started. We're not moving forward. And the same is true for mental health treatment. You need it right now, and we're just not getting it. And what I found necessary is to bring in the county, because often in some jurisdictions, fortunately not mine, the county will take the position that because you're a veteran, you're entitled to VA benefits, so go there. And that's not the way it works. The way it works is you need to have the treatment now. And so,
but can't you get it now from the VA if there's intervention from the county and from the court?
Not necessarily. No, there are waiting lists in our county for almost all treatment. So what we often do is place the veteran in county treatment program. We have the Veterans Administration in the courtroom. We connect the veteran to the VA in Menlo Park or at the Palo Alto Hospital in my jurisdiction, and then we transfer them when they can get in. It is a challenge, a daily challenge. And on the issue of benefits, the wait is unbelievable. I mean, it just is to me, I have too many veterans who come home and because they do not get along, they don't reconnect with their families as we would hope they would. They end up in the street, including families. And I think, you know, this is a constant issue that we have to face every day in the courtroom and work on. And it really does take a strong collaboration. The Veterans Administration simply cannot do all of this. I don't think they've been appropriately funded to provide the services and treatment that we're going to need in the months and years to come.
Let me bring Nick Stefanovic in. Nick, first of all, tell us a little bit about your service. You were in the Marines. You saw combat. Just tell us, if you would, briefly, where you were and when.
I joined the Marine Corps in 2002, and I deployed to Afghanistan. I came home, then I deployed to Iraq. I came home, and then I deployed to Afghanistan for a third deployment and came home and finished my service in 2006.
Mm-hmm. And so when you came home, what kind of trouble did you get into?
It was a process that got me to the point where I needed Veterans Treatment Court. So I was experiencing symptoms directly related to the combat that I had experienced. And
what kind of symptoms?
Things like panic around people. I had a lot of anger, overwhelming anger and guilt just in society around other citizens. Nightmares, anxiety, all of these things that were overwhelming to the point where I couldn't get on day by day with them.
So these are classic PTSD symptoms.
Right, yeah. And so I quickly found that there was a way that I could get on with my life and find some type of peace and serenity by taking a drug. And I found that, and I experienced this type of peace that I never thought I was going to be able to have again. Hmm. And then logically in my mind, it became a matter of I'm going to use this until I'm no longer here on this earth, and I accepted that.
What was the drug or drugs?
It started off with prescription painkillers, and then eventually switched to heroin.
Yeah, and so what was it that landed you in court?
So, of course, when you have that type of habit, it costs a lot of money, and I found I was desperate to the point to where I was stealing checkbooks from people and cashing checks, even just signing my name. That's how much I didn't even care, and eventually got caught doing that. So the charge was
possession of a forged instrument.
Mm-hmm. And how was it that you ended up in a veterans court as opposed to just a regular, you know, criminal court?
Well, I ended up in jail, and at that point, I had no contact with my family or anybody else. So I contacted my parents, and my mother and father started calling everywhere in the community that they could find to find some way to get me some help. And they found a local agency here called the Veterans Outreach Center, and they, through that one phone call to this local agency, I was put on the docket for a veterans court.
Yeah. And what did you feel? Of course, you probably had never been in criminal court before, but what do you feel like you got in that courtroom that you wouldn't have gotten in an ordinary court?
It was very specific, and it was very logical. The one thing that the first thing that made the difference was the judge. The judges and the staff in these courts seemed to be very, very different from any other types of courts. They are there, at least in my court and all the other veterans courts that I've experienced. They are not there for a paycheck. They are not there to penalize people. They are there strictly to help other people. And this judge would have done anything that she needed to do in order to get me help. And just seeing that woman with that type of mentality towards me helped me right off the bat. And the other thing that was instrumental to my treatment was the fact that the one thing that I had in my life left that I could not lose was my freedom. And the only person in the world who had the authority to offer me an ultimatum of, I will take your freedom if you don't give me this chance to help rehab you, was Judge Marks,
yeah.
Was the Veterans Court judge.
And I want to come back to you in a minute, but Christopher Deutsch, how do veteran courts go about selecting the judges? I mean, is it a volunteer thing, or are you looking for particular characteristics, and do they get a special kind of training?
Well, a lot of these programs are going to grow out of existing treatment courts. Drug courts have been around a little over 20 years now, and there's 2,600 nationwide. There's now a number of mental health courts. So in a lot of the communities that are creating veterans treatment courts, the concept of a treatment court has already been in place, and there's some comfort with it. And so a lot of the time, the regular drug court or mental health court team will adopt an additional veterans treatment court docket and be that same team that works the veterans treatment court. But we're also seeing that some judges are spearheading these efforts, whether a lot of times it's their veterans themselves or they're sympathetic to veterans and their situation. But there are a lot of judges who are stepping up to create these programs and volunteering and saying, I will take on this additional docket. They're not compensated for the additional docket. They're volunteering their time. Once they start to put together a program, there is training available. That's one of the things our organization does is we'll take an entire team and do a 5-day training with them, this sort of soup to nuts veterans treatment court training, so that when they're done, they're ready to get up and running. Another option is we have 4 mentor courts around the country. Actually, Judge Manley presides over one of them, and those are sites that we can send jurisdictions to learn how to operate a veterans treatment court.
And Judge Manley, how do you decide whether or not to accept someone to a veterans court?
Well, in our court, it's very straightforward. The referrals come from other judges. I serve with a wonderful group of judges who are very knowledgeable and understand the issues. And in sentencing, as the law provides, they can take into consideration and should take into consideration the mental illness and the fact that the individual was in the military. And so there are direct referrals from judges. I also receive referrals from probation officers, as well as occasionally parole. We do have offenders being released from prison who are on parole, and obviously under the realignment laws of California, they are to be in rehabilitation, and so they will be referred directly by a parole agent.
And what do they have to do to stay in the program or to get in? Do they have to acknowledge something? What do they have to agree to? Is our contract, for example?
Well, as has been pointed out by our veteran who's on the program today, yes, they have to be willing to want this program and want to participate in it. If they are willing to do that, that's all we really ask. Is their willingness? There's a lot asked of them because it's very, very hard to change for anyone. And they are being asked to do a number of things. For example, trying to stop the use of drugs is very, very difficult. And so it takes a lot of courage on their part because we don't force anyone to do this, to enter the program. And for those who criticize these programs, I often point out that it is much harder to complete a program in a veterans treatment court than it is to simply do time and get out and go on with your life and keep using drugs or continue in your mental illness and never have it treated. And I think that's to me the most important thing about what veterans treatment courts are doing. If you look at the national statistical information about how few individuals actually will ever get treatment from the Veterans Administration, even though they're eligible. So they're eligible for VA treatment because of PTSD, but they will never ask for it. And that's the way the Veterans Administration works. Whereas in a treatment court, once you're willing to accept treatment, then we have you assessed and we direct you towards treatment and we expect you to participate in it. And that's the agreement. You will participate.
Christopher Deutsch, Judge Manley said earlier that a lot of the characteristics of these courts vary by county or by state. To what extent, how often, or is it even possible for someone, say, who's been involved with domestic violence or some other kind of violence to get into a program through Veterans Court?
Well, Judge Manley is exactly right. These courts really reflect the communities they served, and they're a team effort that involves buy-in from a lot of different areas. So they will vary. We're seeing a trend of veterans treatment courts looking at violent offenses and broadening their eligibility to include some violent offenses. And really the reason is drug courts have traditionally taken nonviolent offenders. But with the veteran population, some of the issues they're dealing with are really manifesting themselves in aggression and in violent acts. So you're seeing domestic violence. You're seeing a weapons charge or a bar fight. And what the courts have to ask themselves is can we protect public safety, but also get this person into our program and supervise them closely, but also get them hooked up with their treatment that they need. And a lot of courts are going in that direction. And I think it makes sense. I mean, particularly when you can take the behavior and directly link it to a diagnosable condition and then link, treat that condition, it makes a lot of sense for courts to be open to the concept of taking some violent offenses.
And just quickly, Judge Manley, we're coming up to a break, but how often do you see female vets in your court?
Not as often as males, obviously, but it's about 12%. Of the participants, and it's growing. I think this is going to be a growing area in the months to come.
All right. That's Judge Stephen Manley with the Santa Clara County Superior Court. He runs the Veterans Treatment Court down there. We're going to have him on for the rest of the hour, along with Christopher Deutsch from Justice for Vets and also Nick Stefanovic from Rochester, New York, who went through a treatment court there. We'd love to hear from you if you're a veteran, a family member of a veteran, military family, or if you know somebody who's gone through one of these courts or could use help from one of them. We'd love to hear from you. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. 866-733-6786. You can also email your comments to forum@kqed.org or leave a message on our Facebook page as well. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this morning for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning. And on this Veterans Day holiday, we're talking about veterans courts, a kind of alternative justice system for veterans in trouble with the law. And this hour, our guests are Christopher Deutsch. He's the Director of Communications for Justice for Vets. They advocate for the creation of these courts. Also here with me in the studio, Judge Stephen Manley from Santa Clara County, where he presides over the Veterans Treatment Court there. And Nick Stefanovic is calling in this morning from Rochester, a former Marine combat veteran of the wars in Iraq Iraq and Afghanistan and a graduate of the Rochester, New York Veterans Treatment Court. And we do want to hear from you this morning as well on this Veterans Day holiday, 866-733-6786, the number to call, 866-733-6786. And joining us now also from Orange County, Judge Wendy Lindley, who oversees the Treatment Court for Veterans in Orange County. Good morning to you, Judge Lindley.
Good morning.
Let me ask you, first of all, how did you get involved in a veterans court, and how's it going in Orange County? What do you think is unique about the court down there?
Well, one of the things we do here in Orange County is that we do take veterans that have gotten involved with violence in the criminal justice system. And it's our belief here that if we don't treat this violence that is often a overreaction to a perceived threat, which is something that they have been trained to do when they were in combat. If we don't treat this and they're sent off to jail or prison and they return to our community, then being untreated, it actually puts them in a position where they're more dangerous to themselves, more dangerous to others, and certainly doesn't set up a situation for a safe community. So we think it's really, really important for us to assess each person that comes in for their post-traumatic stress issues, for their traumatic brain injury. As you know, we have so many individuals intersecting with criminal justice that suffer from both of those problems. And those problems cause hypervigilance, insomnia, depression. You know, it's just horrible to have to live with those conditions that these individuals are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan suffering from. And, of course, the large number of Vietnam-era combat veterans who still suffer from that and are on the streets all over the United States to this day.
What's your reaction to criticism from some who say that, you know, vets get sort of a preferential treatment in a way from the courts?
Well, here's how I look at it. When those young people go off to protect those rights that you and I enjoy each day, and they come back knowing that, well, when they go, they know that maybe they could be injured, maybe they could lose a limb even, but they don't know that they could lose their soul. And what happens is they come back and they try to readjust to their community, but because of the symptoms of the PTS or the traumatic brain injury, they tend to self-medicate and use, you know, maybe prescription drugs or alcohol or other drugs to deal with the difficulty they have in reintegrating in society. So I think it's my opinion that if we don't make every effort as a society to restore these human beings to those people that they were before they served, then, first of all, I don't think we can afford to go to war if we don't spend the time making these people whole. And secondly, I think that opposed to any other human being that comes into the criminal justice system, these individuals surely deserve our effort to restore them.
What kind of results do you get?
Thus far, we've had 21 graduates. Most of our clients are felony cases. And of the 21, we've had one recidivate. We've been open 3 years, and that's a fantastic recidivism rate early on, and we believe that we will continue to show very, very good results for this. But not only that, we're saving lives, we're saving money, and we're making our community a safer place for everybody.
You use the word graduates. Why is that?
Well, because they have to work very, very hard in the program that we have. It is not easy. And they actually have to be prepared to bravely face the issues that are in the way of them reintegrating in society. We require them to do a lot of counseling, a lot of treatment. We require them to have productive use of time. They must be in school, they must be working, or they must be doing volunteer service for their community. In addition to that, they are drug tested frequently, alcohol tests. We require them to go to medical appointments and have other issues addressed. Some of them suffer from significant depression. They're required to see a psychiatrist, get the help for that. So they are working really, really hard. So when they graduate from the program, we have a very large ceremony for them, and often their families come, their children come. When a parent turns to you and says, "Thank you for saving my son or my daughter. It's an amazing feeling for the staff that worked so hard to restore this person. So the graduation is a big deal. And the other thing is we will also dismiss their cases in most cases. And what that does is, taking the felony off as a dismissal of their record, it makes it easier for them then to get employment and have other benefits that occur from not having a felony conviction on your record.
And why did you decide to preside over this court? Is there some personal reason? Or
The reason this what spurred me to do it was that I have a lot of mental health calendars, and in one of my calendars, we were trying to treat a young man who was suffering PTS and traumatic brain injury as a result of his service in Afghanistan, and the treatment modalities didn't seem to be reaching him, and he did end up overdosing and dying. And then I went to my presiding judge, and I said, not again. We can't have this happen again. We have to create a special court that is where we pull together experts in treating PTS and traumatic brain injury so we can restore these people.
All right. Well, Wendy Lindley, thanks so much for joining us this morning on this Veterans Day.
Thank you for having me.
As I mentioned, there are critics of these treatment courts, in particular the veterans courts, and I want to play a short excerpt from an interview we did with Scott Thorpe, who is chief executive officer for the California District Attorneys Association. Here's what he had to say.
Currently, it's up to each individual county as to whether they have veterans courts. Part of our concerns are that there are a number of interests that want specialty courts, such as drug courts, mental health courts, and part of our concern is that this divides the resources of both prosecutors and the courts into these specialty courts and trying to address all the special interests. We also have some additional concerns about the veterans courts in terms of, especially on behalf of the victims, if they are victims of violent conduct, from their perspective, it's not the nature of the defendant, but it's the nature of harm done, and so we're concerned of representing the victim's interests. The other issue that we're concerned at, there are a number of defendants who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, who, for example, commit sex offenses, etc., but aren't a victim of combat, or do we treat them specially, or is it just because they're veterans? And then the final thing that we are very concerned about is that we want to make sure that if there are veterans courts, the defendants plead guilty and acknowledge their guilt, and then we deal with the proper sentencing and treatment and punishment so that we won't have trouble trying these cases down the road if they drop out of treatment but they haven't already entered a plea of guilty.
That's Scott Thorpe from the California District Attorneys Association. A lot of concerns that he listed there, Judge Manley. But let me ask you about one, and that is how victims react, particularly victims of violent crime or violent domestic violence, whatever it might be. How do you deal with those folks?
Well, in our program, which is strongly supported by the district attorney, and what takes place is I do not do any of the sentencing. Sentencing is done by another judge. That judge accounts for the victims, restitution, and other issues. All those issues are worked out in another courtroom, in another proceeding. In other words, we are not saying, well, because this individual is a veteran, we're going to forget about restitution and we're going to forget about victims. No, victims are incredibly important. We must concentrate on them. And so often when a veteran sent to me, in addition to going through the treatment, the substance abuse, the mental health, the PTSD treatment, that individual defendant must also make full and complete restitution before they can ever graduate or complete our program. And if there's strong opposition or a very, very serious crime in which the offender is going to be sent to prison or to jail for a very lengthy time, they're not going to be in my program. My program is where the Veterans Treatment Court is for an individual that's been granted probation and has already served their sentence. And so I think the issues that have been raised by Mr. Thorpe, which of course are very important issues, are addressed in our program.
All right, let's bring our listeners in now. Again, the number to call if you want to join us on Forum, 866-733-6786. Let's go to Alex in San Jose. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Alex. I'm a veteran of the 82nd Airborne. I was in from 86 to 89. I also live in San Jose. I'm an attorney, appeared before Judge Manley. But my comment is, when I got in, and it's pretty typical, you get basic training for 3 months. And then I was a combat medic, so I went to Fort Sam Houston for 3 months to be a medic. Then I went to jump school to jump out of an airplane for 1 month. So you get all this training going in, turning a normal individual into just a combat fighting machine. And I was, I parachuted into a live round combat mission called Operation Snowcap, jumping into Bogota and Medellin, Colombia, doing coca farm eradication from 86 to 89. Now, my point is, if you train a normal person to be at that cutting edge, just killing machine, why is it that the Army is not giving you the reverse training of coming out?
Hmm. Good question. Nick Stefanovic, I don't know if you want to speak to that or any of the treatment you did get, and how did the Marines help or not help?
Sure. You know, first, I just want to clarify about our military members that are coming out of the service. And a good story that is an example of this is Marcus Luttrell. He was a Navy SEAL who wrote Lone Survivor. And he went through a horribly traumatic experience where he lost the rest of his team. He encountered after his military service, he encountered two men shot his service dog that he had. And he chased these men down and he stopped them. And then he called the police and he was on a show after that being interviewed about it. And he said something that is very important, is that we as military members that receive training to survive in combat does not make us killers. It does not make us violent men or individuals. It's a job. And for the most part, when we get out of the military and we come back to society, we are okay with not going around committing violence everywhere. So I don't want anybody to get the misperception that military members are violent individuals back in our society. To speak to the rest of the question, before I got out of the military, both wars were still going on and were still heated. And I was told that what you can worry about your mental health, you can worry about your disorders once you're out. But I was inactive for about 4 months, still in the military, but not doing anything. That's time that I could have received treatment before I reentered society, and we were told, no, you're just going to sit around all day. Now, I've heard that they are doing a little bit better about that, but there certainly is time in the military where our military members can receive treatment in order to kind of avoid having as severe problems once they get back. And another thing that really needs to happen is the VA needs to be contacting military members as soon as they get out of the service, setting them up with appointments, which they don't do, which
it's not proactive.
The result is people who fall through the cracks.
Yeah. Judge Manley, you want to say something?
Well, he's made a very, very good point, I think. One of the most troubling things to me right now is I have a number of participants in my Veterans Treatment Court who are still on active duty. And so they are being redeployed. They are having to go to trainings. And there's no evidence to me that anyone is paying any attention to treating or having ongoing treatment for their mental health condition. And I think that there needs to be a change. The individual in the military is not going to say anything because if they do, they fear losing everything. And so they're in this catch-22 position. And I think it's in the best interest of the military as well as the Veterans Administration if they were doing something with these individuals before they get into the community, and if they are going to continue to be in the armed forces while they're in the community, they should be receiving treatment, and decisions should be made appropriately as to what they should be doing when they go back on duty.
Christopher Deutsch, I'm assuming that someone who is on active duty and gets into any of these kinds of difficulties with drugs, for example, I mean, they're not going to have access to a drug treatment court, right?
We have heard of some active duty participating in Veterans Treatment Court. A lot of times it's going to depend on where their arrest occurred. Obviously, if arrest occurred on base, that's going to be a different situation entirely. And one that I think we do need to start paying attention to is what happens to those folks who are arrested on base. But if they're arrested out in the community, then they can participate in a Veterans Treatment Court. We've actually seen that quite a bit. And we're seeing that in some cases they will then deploy again after participating in the program. And I think Judge Manley is exactly right. What is the system in place, not just for those who participated in Veterans Treatment Court, but for those who have either participated in treatment or have shown signs for needing treatment? What's the system in place to make sure that while they're deploying or to keep them from deploying and to make sure that they're getting the treatment that they need? A lot of times these are ongoing mental health issues that, 30, 60 days, 90 days in treatment isn't going to be enough. It's an ongoing process to get healthy. And if you have to cut that short to go on a deployment back to a war zone, that can be really a destructive thing.
Yeah. All right, Alex, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Maureen in Menlo Park now. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm a 20-year Air Force veteran officer, technical intelligence officer, and I'm currently an inpatient in the Women's Trauma Recovery Program here in Menlo Park for the Palo Alto healthcare system. And I'm calling to sort of put the voice of a woman veteran on the line and out to the community, because I think it's important to note that one's PTSD and TBI does not always necessarily result in violent behavior or criminal behavior. And I only share my own profile to make the point. I actually earned a PhD after I retired. I teach college. I am sober 28 years in AA, and I am not an unusual case, but we're paying particular attention to these veterans who are suffering so deeply with this, what I refer to as unspeakable sorrow. It's unspeakable because we are trained to be warriors, as someone earlier said. And the fact that these judges are on the line, I can't tell you how grateful I am. The woman judge in particular was so articulate about the need to defend us now that we have defended our country. I wore my uniform proudly for 20 years, and I did it because I believe in the freedom and the luxury, the utter luxury of living in this country. And I did it, and I am not ashamed of that. And I didn't know I had PTSD until I became suicidally depressed and lost a series of teaching positions and felt so desperate I didn't understand what I didn't understand. And I keep using that phrase, but the folks here do, and they have a proven record for helping people get back to work.
Did you go through a treatment court, or you didn't get to that point?
I didn't go through that route. I went through, there's something called CBOC. They're community-based outpatient clinics up in Eugene, Oregon. And my veteran therapist, who's a woman who's Native American and also a veteran, said to me, "Maureen, there is a word for what you're describing." And I said, "There is?" And she said, "Yes. What I have is not just PTSD, but PTSD, MST, military sexual trauma, which I can't talk about and wouldn't now, but there is more to this than the community perhaps understands, that, you know, just because you have a neighbor or a friend with PTSD, it doesn't mean that they're prone to violence. It means more to the point that they're very likely to turn toward violence
toward themselves. Yeah. No, thank you for making that point, and thank you very much for your service as well. Let me bring Christopher Deutsch into this. There is a risk, isn't there, of stigmatizing all veterans, with a show like this? But obviously, it's important to draw attention to the needs that many vets have. But at the same time, as Maureen says, you don't want to imply that that they're all, or even a majority, having problems with violence or some of the other mental health issues we've talked about this morning.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. Nick said it really well just a few minutes ago, but it is important to keep in mind the vast majority of veterans, of people who serve in the military, are strengthened by that service. And they come home and they are heroes of their community. and they're ready to continue to serve their country, not in the military, but as regular citizens. And really, the folks we're talking about, though they may be suffering as a result of that service, if we can restore them, they will be ultimately strengthened by the values that are instilled in them in the military. They're going to be the best employee a company has. They're going to go to university, and they're going to be outstanding students. You know, they're going to contribute. So I think it is important to bear in mind that certainly the vast majority of veterans are strengthened, and even those that are suffering, they are all capable of recovery. And once they recover, they are only stronger for having served in the military.
All right, Maureen, thanks again for your call, and again, thank you for your service.
Much.
Let me just ask you, Judge Manley, you talked earlier about some of the Vietnam vets. Do you see, is there something, and I'll ask you as well, Nick, something unique about the military service of these most recent wars that somehow makes these veterans particularly susceptible to these problems? Or is it just more awareness of things like PTSD and traumatic brain injury now?
Well, I think it's a combination. I think one thing that has been noted and I've actually seen in terms of those who continue to serve is the repeated number of deployments again and again has had an effect, it seems to me. However, I think the lack of understanding of the necessity of treatment for the Vietnam veterans is very, very clear to me, because I have Vietnam veterans now who have never really received the treatment they should have received 20, you know, whatever number of years ago. And if you look at the studies of Vietnam veterans, the number of percentage who still have PTSD today and are still using drugs and are still homeless is just unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. But I do think that what we are seeing is particularly because we're seeing a lot more head injuries, and there's a real correlation that I've noted in talking with them in the courtroom between their mental health issues and the head injury issues. So you're seeing a lot more of that. But I think one of the things is that, you know, there is this important issue of will people go to treatment, you know, and I think if one thing, you know, that I encourage people is to really not look at this as a negative. Look at it as something, it's an illness. It's like any other illness. And if you need treatment, you need to go and get it and not simply wait. I talked to so many Vietnam veterans in my program who just, it was a stigma to ask for treatment. You know, you should come home and be strong and be like everybody else, and you're a failure if you aren't. And so there's a lot of shame and guilt, and I try and tell them again and again, you know, you served your country, you're a hero. You should go and get the treatment and take advantage of it. And I think that you know, that's the message we really need to send, that if there's an illness, that this is not evil, bad, you're not going to commit violent crimes. But if you have a challenge, whether it's depression, TBI, whatever it is, get help.
Yeah. Let's see if we can sneak another call in right now. Let's go to Ron. Ron, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I was a sergeant in the Army. I got back from Afghanistan in 2010. I filed for disability compensation due to physical and mental issues. It was denied. My claim was denied. I filed for an appeal, and they're saying that it's not going to be even resolved until maybe 2014. And the treatment that I've received from counselors and stuff through the VA has just been unacceptable. I mean, I went in there and I told them about all these issues that I was dealing with, and two different counselors pretty much told me that I'd be okay.
Yeah, and Ron, you have not been in trouble with the law, I assume.
I've been arrested one time, and that was after I got out of the military.
Yeah,
and it's no surprise that these veterans are going through this. You know, I don't know if everything is just so backlogged that it's taking forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just taking so long to get anything done.
Yeah. Christopher Deutsch, what advice do you have for people like Ron, who maybe aren't at the point yet of being in a veterans court, but, you know, as many are, is having a problem getting treatment that he needs and is entitled to?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's just tough to hear. And Ron, thanks for your service. And I hope this is taken care of soon. If anything, these programs are really highlighting this what is becoming sort of a national disgrace, which is that veterans who are asking for help are not being able to get it. I think the veteran service organizations are extremely helpful. American Legion, IAVA, get in touch with them. They are strong advocates. They will go to bat for you and do everything they can to get the attention of the local VA, state departments of Veterans Affairs, even so far as contacting your member of Congress and appealing to them to get involved. I've seen all of those strategies pay off, but I think the trouble is that Ron's experience is not unique. There are a lot of veterans out there who are struggling with just this exact same type thing.
Yeah. Well, Ron, again, thanks for your service and best of luck to you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. Judge Manley, just a few seconds left here, but final thoughts and maybe advice for anyone who's listening to this and may be able to avail themselves of a treatment program like this.
Well, I feel so strongly that what we really need to do is, all of us need to speak out and to confront this issue that there is, as Chris said, there is simply inadequate funding and programs for veterans, and we need to pay as much for those who come home as we did to have them serve in combat.
All right. Thanks so much. Judge Stephen Manley from Santa Clara County, thanks for being here this hour. Thanks also to Christopher Deutsch from Justice for Vets, Nick Stefanovic from the Rochester, New York Veterans Treatment Court, and earlier in the hour, Wendy Lindley from Orange County Superior Court. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer for Michael Krasny. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.